I'd like to call the September 6th meeting of the legislature to order. Will you all please rise and join in the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance
to the flag and to the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Kathy, would you call the roll of the members, please?
Yes. Mr. Shinagawa?
Present.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I am here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsey?
Present.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Present.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Ms. Robertson has asked to be excused. She hopes to be here later this evening. Mr. Robinson?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
14 members present.
Thank you. Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices, Kathy?
Communications are on the desks.
We have one proclamation this evening for Beth Harrington. I'd like to read it. Whereas National Preparedness Month creates an important opportunity for every resident of Tompkins County to prepare their homes, businesses, and communities for any type of emergency, including natural disasters and potential terrorist attacks. And whereas investing in the preparedness of ourselves, our families, businesses, and communities can reduce fatalities and economic devastation in our communities and in our nation. And whereas the Federal Emergency Management Agency's READY campaign, Citizens Corps, and other federal, state, local, tribal, territorial, private, and volunteer agencies are working to increase public activities in preparing for emergencies and to educate individuals on how to take action. And whereas the Tompkins County Emergency Public Information Officer team, in cooperation with Tompkins County Department of Emergency Response, is urging the county's citizens to use Emergency Preparedness Month as a time to focus on the critical task of preparing for emergencies. And whereas emergency preparedness is the responsibility of every citizen of Tompkins County, and all citizens are urged to make preparedness a priority and work together as a team to ensure that individuals, families, and communities are prepared for disasters and emergencies of any type. And whereas all citizens of Tompkins County are encouraged to participate in citizen preparedness activities and asked to review the READY campaign's websites at ready.gov or listo, listo.gov in Spanish, as well as Tompkins County's emergency preparedness website at tompkinsready.org to become more prepared. Now, therefore, I, Dooley Kiefer, Vice Chair of Tompkins County Legislature, on behalf of Martha Robertson Chair, do hereby proclaim September 2011 as Emergency Preparedness Month in Tompkins County and encourage all citizens and businesses to develop their own emergency preparedness plans and work together toward creating a more prepared society. In witness whereof, Martha Robertson has fixed her signature. And I'll ask Beth Harrington to come and receive the proclamation and say a few words.
On behalf of the PIO team and our office and all the first responders in our community and our county, I thank you. We did provide some information. We hope that all of you become prepared. And if you give me a call after 9 o'clock tomorrow morning and the weather call, I can tell you whether you have to build an ark or not. So please stay safe, and when you take care of yourself, think about taking care of a neighbor, and there's a lot less work that we all have to do. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't believe there are any executive sessions tonight, but I would like to move resolution number 140, which deals with the road preservation law, up on the agenda to come under the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee's part of the meeting, which will be the first committee report. It's time for privilege of the floor from the public. I will ask that each member who wishes to speak adhere to our three-minute limit for making a presentation, and please state your name and the municipality in which you live in Tompkins County. There are two people signed up ahead. I will call their names in order, or several, and thereafter anyone else who wishes to speak may be recognized. The first speaker is Gretchen Herman.
Okay. I'm Gretchen Herman, 433 Bostwick Road. I basically came here in support for the road preservation ordinance. I want to thank you all for your diligence in following this through. It's a long, hard slog. I would personally like to see the number of trips lowered. I know it's debated, but I think that people who use these roads at our expense can contribute somewhat. Thank you.
Thank you, Gretchen. The next speaker is Joe Wilson.
Good evening. I'm Joe Wilson. I live in the town of Dryden in Ellis Hollow. My wife and I are retired and live on a fixed income. It seems to be disappearing based on our economy and the vagaries of the stock market. Like the rest of you, we pay taxes year in, year out to preserve and maintain and build our roads. I'm here to support the proposed road ordinance. The ordinance is designed to cause those who use heavy trucks on our local roads to pay a reasonable share of the costs of rebuilding them. Our State Department of Transportation says that the structural damage done by one heavy truck is the equivalent of the damage done by 9,000 cars, like those who are driven by us local taxpayers. Our State Department of Transportation also says that if hydrofracking comes to New York State, we can have as many as 36,000 heavy trips per hour on the roads across the Marcellus Shale, and it will cost local governments like this county and our towns between $121 and $222 million per year additional to maintain and repair the damage done. Even if fracking doesn't come, the size of trucks and the volume of trips specified by this ordinance will cause unusual damage to our roads. Because those involved are going to make a profit that we taxpayers will not share in, it is only reasonable and fair that there be an ordinance which will cause those doing extraordinary damage to take some portion of the burden off the shoulders of we local taxpayers. Because heavy traffic already in our county is causing increasing damage, and because the traffic itself is increasing, let's have no further delay in passing this ordinance. If some aspect of it has to be adjusted later based on experience, and I agree that the ceiling should be lower than it is, if some aspect has to be adjusted, it can be done in the future. In the meantime, further delay is only making the current burden on us taxpayers increasingly unfair. As we say in Ellis Hollow, get her done.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Next speaker, Phil Munson.
Thank you very much. I have just a couple concerns I'd like to share with you. I'm greatly in favor of some road use ordinance or restriction, and I am very concerned about the impact of overweight heavy vehicles. Mr. Wood spoke with me this afternoon and was very generous and gracious with his time. I do not appreciate the damage that is caused by trucks using R permits and A permits. They are over and above base weight registrations. Their damage to the road is almost exponential. I have 30 years on a blacktop with big trucks and over 2 million miles experience in that time. I wouldn't want this in my neighborhood, not just for the roads, but for the community. Those big trucks take a great deal more distance to stop and cause a great deal more damage to the other vehicles, people, and property with which they accidentally meet. And those things can be very catastrophic in direct proportion to the weight that's involved. I would favor a more aggressive and vigilant restriction and posting of the roads that are involved. Thank you very much.
Mr. Munson, which municipality do you reside in, please?
I'm sorry, Dooley. I live in Lansing on Munson Road, I believe I am represented by Groton.
Thank you.
And thank you.
Next speaker, Sarah Hess.
Good evening. My name is Sarah Hess. I live in the city of Ithaca, and I'm here to support the road agreement, the road ordinance. I'm pleased that so many people from so many perspectives have worked together to create this law. It shows you've worked very hard to find common agreement on many points, the most important being that a new local law is necessary to protect public safety and to protect taxpayers from the burden of expensive repairs that should be borne by businesses, institutions, or individuals who are using more than ordinary road use. You've been carefully considering the question of where the appropriate threshold for truck trips should be. Is 1,000 trips the right cutoff point between ordinary and extraordinary activity? From what I've heard, setting a limit for notifying the county at 1,000 loads per job may be a reasonable and rational choice to make. And although I haven't done the research that many of you have, I would still recommend a somewhat lower trip number for this reason. If I were you, I'd rather be safe than sorry. The risk that you take in the dollar costs to your budget and to the property taxpayers, of course, would be huge if you've miscalculated this figure. And you won't know what the actual problems with increased heavy traffic are until they've occurred. And then it would be too late to ask for bonding from those who are responsible. Also, I'm unclear about the cumulative effect when several businesses working on the same project, whether they would be triggered, whether each of them, if each of them would not trigger bonding separately, but when all together they cause significant damage, I'm not sure who is held responsible. Businesses make a profit by minimizing their costs. That's what businesses do, and there's no judgment about that, and all businesses benefit from our roads. Tourism, construction, retail, agriculture, all of us. But when those who have extraordinary activity and use want to put their costs of doing business onto us, taxpayers, and whether it's the state or the county or the municipality, then it's your job, the government, to step up and protect the public. Thank you for listening and for your careful deliberations.
Thank you. The next speaker, I'll probably mispronounce his name or her name, Len or Leah?
Leon Edwards the Harris.
Leon Edwards the Harris. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
And your
name? Ithaca.
Thank you.
Good evening, folks. Personally, I've been following this since the Marcellus boom started. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the Baker Shales in Texas and the mess they've got down there with the numerous earthquakes and things like that due to the fracturing. I'll try not to run long, I promise. What I think the county has missed, with all due respect, is the fact that we have something here that we can use to solve your road problem the first time and every time. We have two north-south abandoned railroad beds that are not being used, that have been reclaimed by the previous owners, which are fully capable of carrying each and every bit of heavy traffic. All the drill rigs, all the water trucks, all the supply vehicles, everything. Your standard railroad bed is capable of carrying 286,000 pounds. The larger railroad beds, or the stronger railroad beds, are also capable of carrying almost 400,000 pounds. The north-south railroad beds that exist on the west shore and the old the old east side, where it begins at the Bridge to Nowhere, down by Buttermilk, and goes across the valley and past the university, past the steam station, and on to Edna, could easily be used for this. And the other thing is, I mean, you could install using a rack railway to transport all this machinery up and down, avoiding all the roads entirely. It would be year-round use with no limitations on weight, because you'd have a railroad bed that would be capable of carrying anywhere between 286,000 pounds and 386,000 pounds of payload per foot. The rack railway is, I don't know if any of you have been to Europe and been on a funicular or anything like that, but it's a motorized geared railway that has a centered cog. It's what they call a cog railway. It's got a gear rack in the middle of the railroad. And the locomotive / prime mover uses the rack to put a screw or gear down in contact with the gear to drive forward and reverse. It would be simple enough to accomplish. It would solve your traffic problem the first time and every time. The question is are you going to be able to get these people to do it? Or, I mean, are you going to be able to convince these truck drivers to load their trucks on flatbed railroad cars and pay a certain per diem to have the vehicle transported north or south or east or west, and also make the use of track panels in order to get to a proposed drill site, if it comes to that? I hope I'm not running too long. Personally, as a former hard rock miner, I guess my only feeling is that I've seen what horizontal shale breakage can do, but what I think could be accomplished with the vertical fracturing is better than the horizontal, and it would cause a lot less damage. But my biggest thing item for my discussion tonight was to reuse the old railroad beds.
Okay.
And then you'd have this problem nipped in the bud, done.
Mr. Zaharis,
sorry.
Thank you. I would suggest that you put your comments into the state when they release their final report, because that seems like a statewide suggestion as well. Thank you. Next speaker, Joanne Cipolla-Dennis.
Hi, I'm Joanne Cipolla-Dennis. I reside in Dryden. And I moved to Tompkins County 4 or 5 years ago for the clean air and an area that you could build a house. And I don't really have anything prepared on paper, obviously. But what I'm getting to is the traffic in the Ithaca area is absolutely atrocious. In the last 2 years, I think it's gotten worse. I live up near the airport, which is actually closer to Ithaca than it is to Dryden, and I hear much more traffic from 34B and 38 and 13 than I ever do at the airport. When you suggest that you can lower the amount of truck traffic, that would be absolutely fantastic, because following these trucks into Ithaca, waiting in line at each red light behind them, is not something that I can continue to do, even with air circulation on. It's just not healthy. So by restricting the number of these large trucks, you're also restricting the emissions in the air, and I think that is of critical importance to study that. Ithaca is a small area for this amount of truck traffic, and something has to be done, and it has to be done now. So thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, Faye Gugakis.
Good evening. I live in the city of Ithaca. I have 3 points. One, when I first got here, I noticed that there's no more bike racks outside the building. I don't know what happened to them, but they're not there. The second thing, I've asked of this of you and now the city of Ithaca several times, is that I would like to see a forum with all police personnel, sheriff, Ithaca College, Cornell, city of Ithaca, local officials, and the community to deal with cell phone use, texting, and the tinted windows in cars. We talk about sustainability in Ithaca. How many of you ride a bicycle? I'm not expecting you to ride a bicycle, but I ride a bicycle. But even if I was driving, even as a pedestrian, I want to see who's in the car. I want to see if that person's paying attention to me. Because even though I have the right of way, I'm not going to budge if somebody's doing this. Okay, this is such a sustainability issue. This is such a safety issue. And I don't understand why nobody's talking about it. I would like to see a forum with that, and also when we have all these individuals coming together in law enforcement, I would also want to talk about the increase in crime and the drug trade. I mean, we have drugs coming up to the university and to Ithaca College. That's a huge problem. Why do you think there's a spike in crime all of a sudden? Okay, these are issues that go undiscussed. So that was the second issue. And the third issue is everybody has a right to vote whoever they want. I'm not coming here to judge that. But to tie it in with what was discussed just previously about fracking, okay, in the Ithaca Journal, it said that Martha Robertson, which I was hoping she was here, and I believe you were quoted as well, saying they were voting for Svante, and they're stepping outside of the bounds and ask, you know, getting into city politics. I don't have the paper with me, I'm sorry. And one thing that I felt was very interesting with that is that, you know, right now we are in such a critical issue with hydrofracking that I would like to see the county step over the line and tell the city, we want the city to ban hydrofracking. Okay, the city is now squeaking its way into looking at that. But they need pressure. We are at beyond our 11th hour. And that goes to the whole issue of the roads. The city really should be, or you both, should be working together to deal with this roads, because that traffic's coming through the city. It just makes sense. I mean, when I was at, I had left the meeting, but I saw it on television. I mean, they were discussing these things. And so it's a no-brainer that the city and the county should be working together on it. As for eligibility for voting, you know, I will publicly say this. I find it very hard, and I've said this on Common Council, for students to serve on Common Council, for someone just fresh out of 4 years of college running for mayor. I have a very hard time for that. We are in a critical, critical time in our community. I just needed to say that. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Your time is up. Thank you. Next speaker, Marie McCray.
Good afternoon. I'm Marie McCray. I live on Irish Settlement Road, and it's a county road. I'm here to support the county road preservation law. I know that it has been round and round the table, and the time to vote on it is now. But I would also like to once again register my objection to the 1,000 truck trip limit, and I think it should be lower. I think that the weight should be lower. But as the previous speaker has pointed out, let's put this law on the books now. If it needs to be tweaked later, let's do that. But let's continue to think about the truck trips and the loads on our roads. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And the last speaker who signed up is Margaret McCasland.
Hi, Margaret McCasland. I live on Route 34 in South Lansing, and do I know trucks? From inside my house, I have trouble with phone conversations because the trucks downshift in front of my house. And going the other way, they upshift in front of my house. It's noisy. I think, and it's noisy 24/7, which is one of my questions, is when will the trucks be going? I realize this type of legislation, which I strongly support your passing, and I agree with Marie, pass it now, tweak it later, but I'm going to make a few points about the kinds of tweaks to take into account. what the trucks are being used for has a big effect on the quality of life aspects that come along with this type of legislation. Yes, what you're preserving are the roads. You're protecting our tax base by tying the use of the roads to the expense of repairing them to the people that are using them. But you're having a big impact of quality of life at the same time. When the road use legislation encourages a wide range of activity, you can get into activities that you don't know who's driving the trucks. When we know it's more local activities and the trucks are lighter and the use is more weather appropriate, that's very different. When the trucks run 24/7, 365, whatever the weather, there's a huge quality of life impact as well as a road impact. Again, you want to know who's driving the trucks. That's been a big, big problem in Pennsylvania. With out-of-state driving. Now, rock and gravel's a big deal around here. I rent, but my driveway is a gravel driveway. But that delivery happens once every 10 years. We have to recognize, no matter how much drilling is in this area, because we live in glacial moraine, there's going to be a lot of rock and gravel mining here for drilling in Pennsylvania as well as here, and that happens whether it's conventional or unconventional drilling. So I think we can expect more and more trucks for that purpose, which brings, again, to one of Marie's points, weight matters. And so both the number of trips per project and the amount of weight per truck are going to matter more and more in the future, even though they've already mattered a lot. So thank you for this legislation, and just please keep an eye on what levels it needs to be set at to fully protect us. Thank you.
Thank you. Another name has been forwarded, Elmer Ewing.
I'm Elmer Ewing. I live in the town of Ithaca. We own property in the town of Danby, 7 acres and a house on it. In the house, our daughter and her family live. We have two small grandchildren there. This house is on the intersection of Coddington Road and Germantown Road, German Crossroads. Thank you. I've been there 100 times, but and there's a little dip in the hill just before the house, and I'm concerned about the traffic there now. I just hate to think about the safety of going in and out of that driveway with a lot of these big trucks running along there. So I just want to say me too on what practically everybody else has said. I'm in favor of the resolution. I hope you'll pass it today. I would like fewer truck trips and smaller loads if that were possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ewing. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to speak? Yes.
Good evening. I'm Jean McFeeters. I'm the president of the Tompkins County Chamber of Commerce. I'm clearly all powerful. I live in the town of Caroline. I'm here this evening to speak against the adoption of this local law. I feel very lonely. It has been brought to my attention that this law, as written, would apply to a significant number of building projects at major employers in this county and could hinder their ability to expand and create jobs by adding additional costs, even when such construction projects have not been shown to damage these local roads. Secondly, the law, as written, could significantly alter the competitive marketplace between local trucking companies that have disposal sites on state roads versus disposal sites on county roads or local roads for projects that could use city and state roads exclusively. Let me explain what that means to those of you who were not at the infrastructure meeting the other day. If you, for instance, were doing a building site at Cornell in the city of Ithaca, and you were a trucking company that had a disposal site on a state road that you could get to using 366, et cetera, you would have a significant financial advantage over a trucking company located whose disposal site was located on a county road. So that was the issue that was brought up the other day. This does not seem to be the intent of the law, but that would be the consequence of adoption. I know that the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee has heard from a number of local trucking companies about the effects of this law on their ability to do business. I cannot add the kind of compelling detail to this narrative that they spoke of, but I am convinced by their facts and their passionate concern. I hope you also will be convinced. I ask the legislature to vote against this law this evening or to ask the committee to reconsider and give consideration to increasing the number of truckloads that would trigger bonding, or there is also the possibility of a review by, for instance, the highway superintendent to determine whether such a trip or a project would come under this. I also do have to add this evening, when people speak about taxpayers, I hope you will also remember that the people who own these local companies and work in these local companies and these local companies themselves are taxpayers as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Jean. May I ask if anyone is out in the hall who might not have heard a call for last speakers?
No.
Thank you, Mike. All right, it's time to hear from municipal officials, but I don't see any out in the audience. Am I missing anyone? All right, then it's privilege of the floor for legislators. Anyone? Carol?
Yeah. Thanks to all of you who came to speak, all the people who came to the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee meeting on Friday. We had a lively and long discussion, and to all of you who have, or not here tonight, who have given us input. So I appreciate that. But that's not what I was going to talk about under privilege of the floor. I'm going to talk about a family event, but it isn't the one you think I'm going to talk to you about. The only thing I'll say about the wedding is Tompkins County really is so fortunate that we dodged a bullet with the hurricane. It's the areas that were hard hit have truly been hard hit, and I was in them, and it was not easy. Many of you know that I have four children. Only some of you know that I also have a fifth child, half-child, adopted child. His name is Inza Bamba, and I hope you'll give me a few minutes here tonight to tell you how proud I am of a very special, very, very special event in his life. Inza Bamba will be inducted as an official U.S. citizen this Friday morning in New York City at 8:30 a.m. And I thought that it might be useful and that you might be interested to hear, and I certainly would like to tell you how proud I am of him and at what cost and what a long and risky haul it was for him to now be traveling this route. Inza came to the United States from the Ivory Coast at age 15. He had an older sister here at Cornell, but he came alone. He spoke French and knew some English only with a strong accent. He was a friend of my, still is, a friend of my son, Sasha, who noticed and cared when some of the teachers at school didn't have full patience with the accent or didn't take the time to realize Inza's enthusiasm and innate talent, particularly for music. The band they formed together wrote a brilliant song called Where is the Truth? If I could sing, I would sing it. It was about situations in the United States around the world, and I still hope that one day they try to publish it. They arranged to play all ages, no alcohol parties at great clubs around town. They provided meaningful, fun, awesome outlets for young people in Ithaca for many years of their era together. My other four went on to well-supported, good colleges. Inza not only put himself through First Community College in Canandaigua, then City University in New York City, but he worked on the side, supported himself, and sent money home to his mom in the Ivory Coast through much of that time. During one semester, his status at school was suspended because he was late with bills and didn't realize it. Inza was not daunted. His grades were good, by the way. Inza was not daunted, though. With his innate enthusiasm, he worked his way back. He graduated and was selected for a choice internship in New York City as a recording technician. Inza had other challenges, too. At the start of his second year in Canandaigua, he used the telephone at our house to look for an apartment to live in. I listened as he called one landlord after another. By then, his voice was an easily understandable and quite charming French accent. He'd set off back to Canandaigua each time to look at each promising place, only to show up in his modest but strong African blackness, and one after the other, there was some excuse. The apartment was no longer available. They had decided to renovate. A long-lost sister was returning home. Inza, by that time, was living in his car in order to get to class, and I insisted that he live with us instead, and it was during that period that he really became my fifth child. While continuing to work, Inza went on to graduate with honors from City University and now has achieved success writing music. You sports fans, Jim, you'll like this one, especially basketball fans, can listen for his soundtracks on many of the current NBA commercials. The original voice in the Mazda commercials, that zoom, zoom, zoom with the charming French accent, was his as well. It wasn't until years later Inza learned that way back during that difficult semester in school where he couldn't afford to pay the bills, his official papers might have lapsed. Even to ask about it, once he learned, was to take a big risk that he'd be deported and have to give up the dreams and the career he had built. He took the risk, and it has indeed been a long haul of many years working it out. Well, Inza has succeeded, and I'm so sorry that I can't be there with you, Inza. I'm going to send you this tape, and I hope you appreciate it. If any of you have networks of people in New York City, especially any, I think it was 1994 Ithaca High student graduates who knew Inza, please let them know so they can go and cheer or contact him later with congratulations. For now, I don't know the French word for congratulations, but please join me in applause welcoming this former and very dynamic Ithaca resident as a U.S. citizen.
Carol, I was informed by Martha that there is a certificate for you to give to Inza when you next see him, recognizing what he has achieved. If you could come up and get it, please. That was a long story, but it's inspiring. Thank you. Brian, you wish to speak?
Yes. I believe it's been 3 weeks since we've been here, and I don't know about the rest of you, but it was a nice break, especially considering what we've got coming up. But during that time, there was quite a bit of unfortunate violence in our community here. While I'm not going to speak to the violence, I am going to speak a little bit about the responses that were given to it. I guess I'll start right out with Leslin and JR having neighborhood or community forums in immediate and direct response to that. And I preface all this by saying a little over a year ago, we had some unfortunate instances here in the community, and I think people learn from those. To the good. I'm very pleased with the response of the city, and particularly the administration of the police department, other city officials. I'm glad to hear that our own district attorney will be reviewing the facts of this case, as it should be. And lastly, I have to give a bit of a shout out to our local newspaper, the Ithaca Journal. Everybody can say what you want about freedom of speech, but especially in one of these incidences where it involved the death of a person at the hand of a police officer, very, very unfortunate. The public comments, as we saw from the last incident from last year, were not helpful. As a matter of fact, they were obviously anonymous, many times antagonistic. And that's not helpful with any investigation into what has happened or just the community in general. And I know they've probably taken a little bit of heat for that, but I, for one, commend them for it. You know, there's just not a it's not necessary. There's no reason to have that sort of discussion, especially when it involves a death. And you have to give the law enforcement community time to gather facts, true facts, not things that may or not be true on any comment page, and chase down the leads and arrive at a truthful and good conclusion to the investigation.
So, thank you, Brian.
That's right. Thanks.
Jim.
Thank you. I was fortunate enough the last couple of weeks to be away from the county and not far away around Keuka Lake. And as I do when I go somewhere, I read the newspaper, listen to what's going on in the community, and just try to find out what their local government is like. Penyan in Yates County, roughly 40,000 people. Keuka Lake is bordering on Steuben County, and on the other side, Steuben and Yates in that area. It occurred to me as I was driving over there and going around the lakes, visiting various touristy places, I saw a lot of anti-fracking signs. And it occurred to me that I think the Finger Lakes needs to work very hard. All the governments need to get together and draw a circle around the Finger Lakes and get the same exemption that New York City got for their water system and Onondaga County. I'm only one local government official. We have a lot of state reps that in all these five counties are in the Finger Lakes area, and I think we really have to work very hard to convince the legislature to try to get an exemption for the Finger Lakes area. And, I want to start that effort on my own, and I'm sure there are other people who've already thought of it before me, but it made sense to me as I was returning to Tompkins County that there's a lot of effort, a lot of energy, a lot of enthusiasm to do, in the anti-fracking area, and these other counties have it also. And it gets publicity in their papers, and my sense is we should join together and really work hard to get an exemption. And I would welcome any assistance from anyone, and also just the names of the people. Well, I know the names, but how to go about starting an effort like that, I think it could solve a lot of problems for us in this county, and especially around the Finger Lakes, who all use the water from all the lakes that they have, and all the tourist things and all the wineries. I think the whole natural gas drilling thing would be devastating to the Finger Lakes area.
Thank you, Jim. Mike?
Jim, I'd just like to say hear to that. And I'd certainly be a person who would like to join in that effort. But I wanted to talk a little bit about something Carol mentioned, and that was the fact that we were kind of lucky here last week that we dodged the bullet of the hurricane. We had some rain, but we didn't get anything like they got along the eastern seaboard into Vermont and Canada. We've had events here that come through every now and then. I remember as a very small child Hurricane Hazel that went through here and then into Canada and killed many people. I remember Hurricane Agnes that came through here and devastated Corning and Waverly and other areas in the Susquehanna Basin. I remember 1981, just 30 years ago, when we had a flash flood in Dryden that did a lot of damage in our community out there, which led to the flood control project, the Crispell Flood Control Dam, which was a joint project of the county, the town of Dryden, and the village of Dryden. So when those reports were coming that we might have significant event here, I couldn't help but think about the possibilities of what could happen here. and was very, very relieved to talk to and communicate with town and village representatives and our emergency disaster coordinator, and that, for example, regular inspection and maintenance had been done for the Crispell Dam. The trash rack had been cleaned this summer. It had been inspected, and that it was ready for an event. This time we didn't have to rely on it, but it's there, and I think it's very important to know that we have people out there on the front line thinking about these things ahead of us. And I really want to say thanks to all the people, particularly Marsha Lynch, involved in the public communication effort, the updates that were sent out on the weather to people, and the possibilities of being prepared for disaster. I think that went well and reflects very well on our county and the way we think about protecting our citizens. Thank you.
Thank you. Leslin?
Boy, it must be one of those days, or I'm just extra tired, and I just want to cry. Carol, thank you for sharing. This is a story. As an immigrant, I know all too well that story. And, you know, spend a good portion of my time driving other people who have come here as refugees to several hearings with immigration, and them being afraid because of, you know, their status has expired, nothing is coming through, and not able to get, you know, money or support because you have nothing to show that you are supposed to be here. And I'm always nervous that one day I will... I always say I'll take someone, and you know, and if the immigration officials say, well, that's it, we're detaining you and sending you away, then I'll have four more children that I take care of in my home, or five more because they have their children with them. So I know that story all too well, so thank you for sharing, and congratulations to Ace on his achievements. Jim, I too will join that campaign. I started to think of, this is campaign season, I see all the candidates' lawn signs every which way. And I'd love to see a campaign like that for no frack, and I'd love to see those no frack signs in everybody's yard. As a matter of fact, I've been trying to find out where to get one. So if somebody knows where I can get one, don't even ask me. Just put it in my yard or put two or three. I will have the entire Clinton Street plastered with no frack signs. Because I think our citizens, in as much as they hear about it and we see, you know, the graffiti paintings and so on and so forth, are not quite sure of that impact. I'm not sure they understand really what it means, a number of people. So as you continue your work, I see Sarah here, I know there's been a lot of work around it. Sometimes those things that are visible help people to think some more. So I'd love to see that local campaign where everywhere I go, I see a no frack sign, just as much as we love putting out those candidate lawn signs. Brian, I do want to echo the sentiments of how our law enforcement folks and everybody learned from the tragedy of last year and have dealt much better with all of the craziness that's been going on in our community and the violence. It's not like Jared and I to take credit for any of it, so please don't. We just do what we need to do. This is a neighbor's request, and you respond. If I was just Joe Citizens and the neighbors had requested, I would have responded just the same. But thank you anyhow. I, just before I left my office to get here to the legislature, I saw an email release that said that one of the suspects was captured in one of the shootings on the south side. And I mention this whole violence because it seems like almost every night somebody is shooting, whether it's in the air or, you know, there's fireworks and then it sounds like gunshots following that. And I don't know if people think that this is a joke, but it's not funny. People are scared, people are nervous, and people can be hurt. So let's not continue to do this. It's not a joke, and I'm talking to the folks who are out there who think it is. To stop doing it, it hurts our community in more ways than one. We're going to have people trying to get up and leave out of here because they're wondering what's happening in Ithaca. And so we can't have that. So please just calm yourselves down and stop. It is not a game by any means. Okay, and I don't remember what else I was going to say, but just that's it.
Thank you. Dave, did you have your hand up?
Oh.
Yes, I did. Oh.
I know what it is. Right. I do want to say thank you to all the folks who have come out to talk about the road preservation law. At Facilities and Infrastructure, we had the opportunity to have an up-close and personal conversation with the developers who have concerns. And so we were able to hear the other side. And Jean was there, and Ithaca College was represented. And so we were able to hear the other side. And I learned a whole lot more just having there. Although there were meetings and there was a lot of work that went into it, it was interesting to hear some more information. We left that meeting with, you know, some slight changes to make. I saw Jonathan had gone back and done some of it. That would make this better. But I also know, I want to point out to Jean, just in her comments, that in this document, number 7 under general provisions, does address the issue of whether a bond will be needed or not. So it's not a blanket. As soon as you're going to do a project that would require this many truckloads, there's a bond that will be required. There is a process for determining if one will be required or not for that purpose. So thank you all, because it was also good to hear the other side. We've heard some before, but it's also good to hear the other side and your concerns about how heavier truck traffic will affect your lives. So thank you.
Dave.
Good evening. I'd like to thank the public for coming out, speaking on the road preservation law, and all the local contractors that have contacted us and spent so much of their time, which is quite valuable to them, trying to get us informed, well informed on their needs and what it means to them. So thank you very much for that. On a much lighter note, I'd like to invite everybody to Newfield this weekend for the Old Home Day celebration. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Frank, you are next.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. I wanted to piggyback on Beth Harrington's proclamation this evening. I laid on your desks at her request booklets that look like this, which are supplied by FEMA, and in an effort to prepare your families for whatever eventuality may come up in an emergency. I sympathize with Mike. Some of us lived through a couple of those disasters that he was highlighting. And we were indeed fortunate that it missed us, but we may get something this week from what we were told regarding the storms that are headed our way. With regard to Jim's request on drawing a circle around the Finger Lakes to try to get the same designation that New York City and Syracuse have gotten for the water supply, I put my hat on as the Water Resources Council chairman. I would suggest that we bring a resolution perhaps to this board and get it to the state, to the DEC. There's still an open comment period on the SDGIS, and we're not finished with our comments at the WRC either, Jim, so it would be helpful if perhaps that could come our way too, and we would support that effort 100%, believe me. I think that's a great step in the right direction for the whole area. At two meetings back, we had a presentation by a gentleman from Soil and Water Aaron came to talk about the EPA and the TMDLs, if you recall. Martha referred that material to the Ag and Farmland Board as one of the potential responders to it. Pat and I were at the meeting last week, and my understanding is that that board did endorse the letter that the Water Resources Council and the Soil and Water District passed, and I just wanted to give you a report on that, that indeed they are behind making sure that New York State and the DEC are treated fairly at the federal level so that there's not overkill on some of the regs that we're being asked to abide by. Last but not least, mark your calendars, September the 16th. This is another reminder. This will happen before we meet again. The 16th is the watch fire put on by the Vietnam Veterans Association, the chapter here. It's in Pat's neck of the woods at Myers Point, 7 o'clock, and you're all welcome. As I've said before, several of you, Mike, has been a faithful attender at that, and I hope that if you have an opportunity, you can come down right by the water on the 16th. Thank you, Madam Chair, and I won't report on the Travers race.
Will?
Hey, Julie. Thanks to all for excellent comments, and Jim, I completely support, and thank you for bringing that idea to us. It's regrettable that we have to think about protecting a region and the fact that our governor seems poised to allow this anywhere in New York State, but if we can do what we can do, I certainly want to be part of that effort. As everybody is undoubtedly aware, we're coming up on the 10th anniversary of the horrific events of 9/11. There are a series of events happening this week. The Ithaca Journal has done a very good job of listing them. One in particular I think that many may be interested in. This Sunday, there will be a special ceremony at the Ithaca Fire Department from 8:30 to 9:30 a.m., which is concurrent with the time when the first plane hit the World Trade Center. And President Scordon from Cornell, President Rashan from Ithaca College, and Carl Haynes from DC3 will be speaking along with a number of other firefighters and police officers, they'll be in remembrance of the firefighters and police officers who lost their life on that day, and possibly remarks from people who may have lost a friend or a relative. So I would encourage everybody to consider joining us down there. Thank you.
Thank you. Pam?
Julie, I have...
Nate.
Nate?
Sorry.
Go ahead.
I have Nate and Pam and Dave a second time. And I'm sorry, Nate was next.
I just have a very quick report. I had my fourth meeting of the healthcare subcommittee for the Southern Tier Regional Economic Development Council. We are nowhere near as contentious as the energy and infrastructure and other committees. So the two proposals that we're going to be bringing forward out of our committee are on supporting healthcare information technology, especially around regional healthcare information organizations, so that way when you get hurt at say in Broome County, but you're from Tompkins County, that information could be electronically wired over to those hospitals, and their systems would be able to speak to each other. So that's something that we're working on. And then also the second project focuses on the senior living communities side of things. And there was an observation that throughout the Southern Tier, there are so many buildings that are abandoned or are being abandoned that are large area buildings that have been given to governments and local governments, and people don't really have a plan for them. And so people with the committee talked about the need for more assisted living communities because there's a lot of the population in skilled nursing facilities, which is very expensive, actually could be in assisted living facilities, but there's a lack of those type of facilities throughout the Southern Tier. And so one of the ideas is to have the state work with local governments in finding funding and ways in which to rehab those buildings and to assisted living communities with also independent living communities mixed in with it, kind of creating a village-like concept. So that's something, those are the two projects that we're working on, again, not as controversial as the other subcommittees. And we hope to wrap up everything by September 20th or so. All right, thank you.
Thank you, Nate. Let's see. Pam is the next new speaker.
Thank you, Dooley. I just wanted to let people know that on South Hill, on the 18th, we are going to have our annual brunch. It's our welcome to our neighborhood brunch for the students who are from Ithaca College who have moved into the neighborhood. It's a co-sponsored event by Ithaca College and the South Hill Civic Association. It's a well-attended event. We do it late enough in the morning on a Sunday so that people are up and about. And it's a real neighborhood building kind of event.
That's a nice idea. I think the next new speaker is Peter.
On two previous occasions, I reported to this group about a public session that I had participated in regarding the budget. And I have one more to report about that I think is interesting. This was, in contrast to the other two, which were public sessions and announced to, and everyone was invited to come and was announced in the newspaper, this was a private session to a private group. And because it was a private session, I thought the group would be interested in hearing it. But since it was private, I thought it was inappropriate to have it officially a county presentation. So I just gave it myself using the presentation that Joe had made. And this was to the Town of Ithaca Democratic Committee. That's a group of 35 people who are very enthusiastic, and I thought they would be interested, and indeed they were. And the turnout was greater than any of these meetings that I've ever participated in. There were more than 20 people there. I gave it with Will and Dooley. The three of us are the representatives of the Town of Ithaca on the legislature. Everyone was really quite interested in it. I think people in general have no idea what it is, what the budget is, what exactly we do in the county. What do they get for their money? How much money do we spend per person? All of those things. People seem surprised when I went through the list. And what surprised me was at the end of them, what I tried to do in this presentation was to give them some idea of what it was like to be a legislator and what exactly it is you decided upon and what you kind of based your decision on. And not in generalities, but in specifics. And so I went through and talked about the programs that I knew most about and cost the most money. And as I say, there was a lot of interest, but the thing that surprised me, I just report to you, at the end, I asked a question of them as the same question I had asked at the other two that I gave was, how many of you think we ought to have a tax increase that was beyond the tax cap? And I asked people to raise their hands, and in the room, all but one person said that they thought that we should, in fact, have a tax increase that was beyond the tax cap. I have no comment on that, but I just report what it was that I saw.
Thank you. Next new speaker, Kathy Herrera.
Kathy Luz Herrera.
Kathy Luz Herrera.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to alert you to a local community event celebrating community through music on the porches of Fall Creek and Northside. Put it in your calendar, Sunday, September 25th, Porch Fest. Look it up, porchfest.org. All kinds of music, let me just give you an idea. Dixieland, folk, rockabilly, Latin, bluegrass, opera, modern dance, jug band, old-time jazz, choral music, storytelling, garage, alt-punk, country, pop, mandolins, drums, finch horns, ukuleles, recorders, fiddles, and much more. No cost for admission. It's all about community. Come on.
What time?
1 to 5:30 approximately, September 25th.
That's great.
Dave, you wanted to say something additional?
Thank you, Julie. Yes, I did. I'd just like to remind everyone that tomorrow is the first day of school. School buses and young kids will be crossing the roads. Please pay attention. Watch where you're going. Be aware they're going to stop. And the kids may run out when they're really not supposed to. So keep your eyes open. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dave. Leslyn, you had something else?
That's what I was about to say. Thank you, Dave. Okay. Because in case you don't know, Indira Claiborne is going to kindergarten. So watch out now. Slow down. But seriously, because I work at a community center, because I work at GIAC, the buses bring children. We see people who do not obey the flashing lights. People just go by. We were just talking today about the folks who don't believe that that actually is a stop sign. There's not a slow down and roll through. It's a go through. And so I really want to echo what you said and say to folks, lots of children going out to school for the first time, not sure where they're going, little still discombobulated about how to get on and off the bus, any number of things. So please, please, please be cautious. I know our law enforcement officers will be out there, but we just need more of our citizenry to be extra careful and aware about that. Yeah, she's going to kindergarten. I'm proud of her. But I also want to mention to all of you, in case you don't have it on your calendars, it's September 18th from 4 to 7. So right after you enjoy brunch, take a nap, come down to the Women's Community Building from 4 to 7. There is a community celebration honoring a stalwart member of our community, Dr. James Turner, who is the founder of Africana Center and Africana Studies and Research Center at Cornell University. Dr. Turner has done amazing work in this community and worldwide. He is world-renowned, and so we want to show Dr. Turner how much we appreciate the fact that he's been in our community. He has put us on the map in terms of the work at Africana and the work that he does. So please come on out and celebrate and show him lots of love and support. Thank you. 4 to 7, Women's Community Building, September 18th.
Hey, Leslyn, when Indira runs for kindergarten class president, can I be your campaign?
Girl, you know she's all, she's not even running. She's just like, I'm president. That's it.
Carol, you wanted to say something else?
Yeah, I wanted to ask Nathan or Joe or maybe Jean, if the others don't have the answer to this, maybe you've heard something. As you talked about the Economic Development, the Regional Council, the Healthcare Committee, and I heard, healthcare, senior housing, assisted living, and I know other committees, it's tourism and jobs and economic development. I asked a question here last time, and I wondered if anybody had heard, I haven't heard any discussion of this, for these economic development councils, somewhere between $700 million and $1 billion is the figure I've heard that they're dispersing. Competition between every program, between every region. This is really echoing tonight. I know it replaces dozens of programs, former state programs. Has anybody heard anything about how that $700 million or $1 billion compares as a total to what had been available before? I think that's a very important question. It could be a fraction. What's the state budget? I mean, this could be just a fraction of what was available before, and I just think we should be aware of that.
Yeah. Sorry, I don't know, Carol. Yeah. I mean, I can ask. I'm not sure who I would ask, but I'll try. I'll talk to Kevin.
They have tried to give the impression that it's the equivalent amount, just being divvied up differently, but I have no basis for thinking that's correct.
Affordable housing. Throw affordable housing into that.
Frank, you wanted to say something additional?
Yes, thanks, Dooley. Peter reminded me on the 21st of September in the town of Danby, there'll be yet another one of the budget presentations. Joe and Marcia, myself, will be there at the Danby Town Hall at 7 o'clock. That's a Wednesday, and then the following night, the 22nd, we'll be doing a similar thing in Caroline. Joe has asked for to borrow someone's GPS system because he hasn't been out that far yet in the county, and he's looking for a driver, apparently. But 21st and 22nd in Danby and Caroline. Thanks, Stu.
I see no other hands up. I'm going to insert myself into this long lineup. I wanted to say that I'm standing up here because Martha is at the Energy Work Group in Binghamton, which is happening right now. And she represents us very well, and we agreed that it was probably more important for her to be there talking about hydrofracking and our concerns than for her to be here running this meeting. But we're making it last long enough that she's going to get back before it's over. I barely got back here in time for this meeting. I was in Saratoga, which is a really nice city, but they certainly don't know how to handle rain. The streets flood terribly. And driving back from Saratoga Springs to Ithaca this afternoon, you cross where the Mohawk joins, and the Mohawk is still up there in flood stage. And driving along Route 88, there are lane closures where you can see that some banks had washed away again, the same kind of problem that happened there the last time we had heavy rain. So it's good to be back in Ithaca. And I wanted to make a few comments on other comments I've heard. Jim, I very much like the idea of trying to protect the Finger Lakes watersheds. But what has often not gotten mentioned that makes the New York City watershed and the Syracuse one different is that Skaneateles Lake and the Catskill sources for New York City are pristine enough that they don't need to be filtered. So they are a different kind of water supply than all of the rest of us have. That was ostensibly the reason why they got the extra protection. But I absolutely agree with you that all watersheds, which takes care of the whole state, needs to be protected. And I admire your energy in taking this on, and I certainly would support you. And I think Frank's suggestion for a resolution is a very good idea. Someone asked, I think it was Leslin asked, about where you get no-frack signs. On the Commons, Autumn Leaves Bookstore, okay. Second floor, that's where that effort is housed.
The Worker Center? Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
But they cost. They're not
that's
free.
Fine.
Okay,
fine.
Just wanted you to know. So now we have no special topical presentations. The chair's report, Martha did leave me a report to share with you. She mentioned some of the 9/11 activities, which I think have been fully covered here. The one on Sunday at the fire station. I may have missed it. Did someone talk about the September 6th, that's today, the registration deadline for the Thursday, September 8th GAC meeting? Has that been mentioned tonight?
No, I was going to give this part of my WDIC report.
I will let you do it then. Martha,
it's here.
That's fine. She also wanted me to alert you that on Wednesday, September 7th, there's a gas drilling event in Dryden at the fire hall. The speakers are Bill Capel from USGS, Chip Northrup, a former gas and oil industry planning manager, and some representatives from the Independent Oil and Gas Association and Chesapeake Energy, and it's being sponsored by the Dryden Safe Energy Coalition, Wednesday, September 7th. at the Village Fire Hall. And the last thing she wanted me to mention, and maybe this has already been mentioned and I didn't catch it, the Southern Tier Regional Economic Development Council's public forum, Thursday, September 8th, yeah. 6 to 8 at the Women's Community Building. That's been covered. Okay. Thank you. This takes us to other county staff, if anyone is here to be recognized, but I don't see anyone for that. Any resolutions to add to or withdraw from the agenda, people? I skipped them. That was pretty good. Okay, I'll go back to number 8 on the agenda. I'm sorry.
Trying to shorten the meeting?
Oh, gosh. The county administrator is first in line, and I apologize, Joe. You did offer me a telephone book to stand on. I should have taken it.
And, you know, I'm going to spare you a report tonight. I'm going to reserve my time to present the 2012 budgets when it comes time for the Budget and Capital Committee to report. So I'm going to reserve my time for that that block.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Then maybe we can hear something from the county attorney.
No.
Get it, Jonathan.
Other than that.
And our finance director? I must have known that was going to happen. All right. So I will now ask any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda. No, we're good to go with the consent agenda. I think there's one appointment on the consent agenda, which, well, let's see. Do I read the, does someone move it first and then I read them? I read them first and then someone moves them. All right. Consent agenda, resolution A, there's a revised version that should be in your red folders. Award of bids, construction of apron expansion, that's the old FBO site, at the Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. Resolution B, authorizing supplemental consultant agreement number 1 with CNS Companies for full-time construction observation and contract administration services in connection with the apron expansion at the Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. Resolution C, authorizing acceptance of an FAA grant or grants to construct the apron expansion and or design projects for the terminal ramp rehabilitation and expansion of the ARFF, that's the CFR building, for an operations office, all at the Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. And resolution D, authorizing acceptance of a New York State Department of Transportation Air 99 grant to accomplish repairs to the terminal roof and canopy at the Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. And resolution E, budget adjustments and implementation of New York State Office of Homeland Security grants and initiatives, Department of Emergency Response. And there's one appointment under the consent agenda. That's an appointment of Catherine Gehring, Town of Dryden representative to the Youth Services Board, term expiring December 31st, 2012. Would anyone care to move the consent agenda? Kathy, second? Pat, it's been moved and seconded. Are you ready to vote on the consent agenda? All in favor, raise your hands, please.
Aye.
I see 13. Frank, are you against it?
No.
Your hand is up. Thank you. Then it's unanimous. And this takes us to our standing and special committee reports and motions. The first committee listed is Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, and that would be Carol Chalk.
Thank you, Dooley. I think we will take first, before I give my report, why don't we, since we moved up the... Item 15 on the agenda,
unfinished business, resolution number 140, adoption of local, and I'll point out that there is a version in your packets with slight revisions to it. Adoption of local law number A of 2011, amending the county code in relation to road preservation by temporarily excluding certain traffic that would materially injure county roads. Make sure that that wasn't revised. And I so move.
Carol, do you want to make it a motion to lift it from the table?
I will make a motion to lift it from the table because I'm being instructed by our legal advice that I should do that. I so move that we lift it from the table.
Second. Pam seconds that.
Thank you.
Are you ready to vote on lifting it from the table? Yes. All in favor, raise your hands, please. It appears to be unanimous. Thank you.
Now, is the proper procedure for me to move the main event here?
Yes.
Okay. It's been a long haul, so to speak. I would like to move resolution number 140, adoption of local law number A of 2011, amending the county code in relation to road preservation by temporarily excluding certain traffic that would materially injure county roads. It is the revised version in your packets, and I so move.
Is there a second? Pam. Did you plan to say something?
Only a very few words. I would like to thank our staff, and I'd like to thank the public. I'd like to thank all of the business owners and everybody who's come out over this very long time as we've sent this back to committee twice. I want to thank Mike Lane and the Government Operations Committee for bringing us the legal basis for this, and then others for for doing all the work that they've done on it, Joe in particular. I want to make it very clear that the intent of the committee in moving this forward is that this apply uniformly to all projects, that we are not distinguishing between uses. I think that's all I'll say at this point. If we pass this tonight, staff will continue working on it. It doesn't entirely go away, folks. They will still be working on the procedures that would then be set into place once we require people to come talk to us, to our highway department. We will figure out exactly how this will be implemented.
Before I call for legislative discussion or questions, I wanted to point out to the public that's still here that the effective date for this law is one of the things that has changed from the previous version. It will now become effective. It's to become effective January 1st, 2012, which should allow for any further adjustment if we feel it's necessary before then, although that's certainly not our intention.
Yeah.
That will give us time for the response to come from engineering companies from whom we'll be soliciting proposals to help us figure out the best process for analyzing the state of the roads before they suffer possible damage and the state of the roads after they have suffered real damage. And I wanted to also ask Jonathan to speak to something that he had mentioned at the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee in response to something that Gene McPheeters also raised tonight, namely how it might be possible to level the playing field for the handful of local businesses that would be gravel mining probably, who at present are usually approached by our large employers when they have construction projects to see if they want to bid as part of them. and Jonathan thought there was a way not to change the law, but to address their concerns. And Jonathan, if you could explain that now before we get into any more detail, that would be useful.
Sure. One of the big issues that was discussed with many people there from the industry was their concern about particularly businesses in the county which own sand and gravel supply places, which are on or adjoining county roads, which need to use those county roads to get to sites, whereas some of their competitors are on state roads or out of county and don't need to travel on county roads to get to the same project. So, for example, if there's a project at Cornell and there's one mining or sand and gravel supply facility which is on a state road and one which is on a county road, then the one which is on the county road would be competitively disadvantaged and probably wouldn't even be asked to bid. So there's legitimate concern from those with businesses on or near county roads, which would otherwise not have to travel on the county road, and their competitors wouldn't, that they would be competitively disadvantaged and lose business both to places within the county that are not on county roads, but also out of county places. So that's a serious concern because we, you know, obviously the purpose of the law is not to disadvantage anyone relative to anybody else. But one of the things that we talked about and I was thinking about is that we still have to develop the rules and regulations for determining how we're going to set bonds and how we're going to determine damages to the roads. And in these few instances where there are these facilities on county roads, I think we could probably have some sort of predetermination rather than waiting by the project. So, for example, I mean, as we all know, certain roads of the county are in much better condition than others, like compare like Tripphammer and Warren to maybe Hanshaw and Coddington, that there could be some predetermination on certain roads that there could be greater traffic at certain amount periods of time, particularly during the dry season or parts of the construction season, determined in advance rather than having to wait for the project. And that would actually, I think, be good for the overall scheme where we could make some determinations in advance based on the quality of the roads. Now, obviously, you couldn't do it forever because the quality of the roads change over time, but for certain periods of time, so that with these respect to these businesses, they could point out those areas of road where they might necessarily have to travel, and we could make, as part of this process, a determination in advance of any particular project so that they could know that they might have a higher limit or something on particular projects, so that they wouldn't be disadvantaged relative to others. And I think we could work that into our whole rules and regulations procedures without having to change the law.
Thank you, Jonathan. I hope that saves us time to have you done that first. I'm not sure. Does anyone have any questions for Carol or comments? Mike?
I don't have any questions or comments on what he said, but I would like to be recognized.
Mike?
I would like to make an amendment to the local law. I want to say that I do support this local law. I wish we'd passed it 8 months ago. But I think we've got a better local law now that we've done a lot more investigation, and I certainly support it. However, I want to move to change the threshold to from 1,000 to 1,250 truckloads. I do that. Well, let me just make that motion, and to I realize it would require a new public hearing, but I do think it's a better way to go, and I'd be glad to speak to that if I get a second.
Frank seconds the motion.
The reason I bring this up again, and I know we all want to be done with this, but we did have this almost two-hour conversation at our last facilities meeting, as Carol has told us about. In our first public hearing, we heard developers and truckers talk to us about a 5,000 load threshold. At the second public hearing, we heard them talk about a 2,500 truck load threshold, both of which I think are higher than they should be. But what I'm thinking about is what our own highway department brought to us initially based on their investigations, which was 1,250. That was reduced to the 1,000 truckloads at the committee meeting in which the local law was initially adopted. I think based on what we've heard, based on the effort here not to do what has been termed unintended consequences, I think the 1,250, as discussed by our highway department originally, makes a lot of sense.
Carol?
I was just going to ask if Joe would be willing to give us a little bit of history here thoughts about how we got from the original 300, sort of 30 truck trips per week for 10 weeks up to the second number the second time around and now to the 1,000, and having heard this new round of comments, how and why staff made the recommendation that you have?
Well, I can certainly give you the evolution of where we've been. And as Mike and others have said, this is a better local law than where we started. And it is the result of four opportunities for public input, two formal public hearings, two other meetings. That's really helped us get a better handle on these numbers. When we began, the threshold that would trip a permit was 10 trips per day for three consecutive days. That was the threshold to come in for a permit. That is apparently consistent with what some other communities have done in New York State. It's also for trucks over 20 tons. Where we are now is a far cry from that, obviously, with 1,000 trips, trucks over 30 tons. So that process of evolving from the original point to where we are right now took a lot of things into account. One of the pieces of information that was looked at, I know, by Bill Sesney, because there's one segment that we have looked at, which is the drilling industry, and that certainly doesn't apply just to the drilling industry, but there have been some concerns there. Came out of the DEC report that projected the number of truck trips for an ordinary well. I think there was a range in there of, I think it was it 1,000 to 1,350?
It was like
850 to 1350, and the original number that we had looked at, I think, was 1350. As a result of kind of further review and discussion, that was then lowered to the 1,000 that we have today. It does seem to be a tipping point between ordinary and extraordinary as we look at the projects. It looks like many of the projects where we've been given trip generation information, even at 1250, they probably would still need to come in for a permit. It does seem to be something of a dividing line between ordinary and extraordinary.
Will?
Thank you for that explanation, Joe. But I would actually also like to pay attention to the comments that were brought to us this night and the concern that maybe the threshold we've come up with is actually too high. So I would actually like to propose that we lower that threshold to 800 trips per day. It would be an amendment to Mike's amendment.
The motion.
Yes.
Is there a second for that amendment? Seeing none, it dies for lack of a second. I'm going to insert myself to speak about the lower limit, however, because at the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, we did talk about staff's background information on the range of numbers that led them to suggest 1250. And for different components of the process, this was strictly looking at hydrofracking, not the other high-frequency, heavy-duty traffic that large construction projects of a different sort would bring. But for hydrofracking, if you added up all the high numbers of the ranges they gave, you got 1,250. If you added up all the low numbers of the ranges they gave, you got 800 or so. So I think it arrived at 1,000 because it was between those two ranges. But moving to take staff's lowest numbers makes perfectly good sense, too. I just wanted to share the background for where that came from. So, on the main motion, Jim?
Yes, it is on the amendment.
The amendment did not get us.
Yes.
Mike's amendment is the main motion now, yes.
Yeah, and that's what yes. it's about. I know that the chair of the committee thinks that it's been a long time, but I've been in local government long enough to realize that I think that we're moving at warp speed on this issue because we haven't, we still have time to make some changes, and it would not affect greatly what we would do. I'm going to support Mike's 1250, and another public hearing would not be out of the ordinary. I don't think it should. You should vote no because it would be another public hearing. You vote on the number and let it go at that. So I'm going to support my first 1250.
Pam.
Well, I am not going to support Mike's amendment for the same reason that I didn't support Will's. I think that we have gone through a substantial process here. There has been a lot of discussion, and this seems like a rational compromise at this point. We may want to change it in the future, but it feels as if that we need to move forward with this without reopening those points of contention, and just to see how this plays out and perhaps make adjustments in the future. So I will not be supporting this amendment.
Peter?
I also am not going to support the amendment. The way I look at it is that there is no break point. There is no number that's right. It's clear that if you make the number too high, if you make the number 10,000 or 20,000, that no one will trip it. And so there's no point in having it. And also, if you make the number too low, then everyone will trip it, and you can't possibly even administer the thing. So there is no number that's right. And what it seems to me is that you can make it, and about any number that's proposed, you can make an argument both for raising it and lowering it. And a bunch of people have spent a lot of time looking at this thing, and I am going to support what they came up with because I don't think I know any more to make it go to change that number one way or the other.
Anyone else wish to speak? Are you ready? Oh, Pat?
Thank you, Julie. Even as late as this afternoon, I was continuing to have phone calls regarding this legislation. And although I think there's merit on both sides of the proposal here in terms of the number, I think to some degree Peter's correct, not when he says that there's no right number, but just that it's whatever that number may happen to be, arguments can be made in either direction. However, I do think that this is these are challenging times, and not only for us in our everyday lives, but also for the businesses that support our community and are the backbone of our tax base in many cases. And when I have people coming to me and calling me and saying, this is going to be really tough, you're making it tougher to do business here in Tompkins County, I have to balance that against the fact that I also have property owners who are coming to me and saying, we can't afford to pay the taxes, we're moving out of Tompkins County. So it's not an easy choice. However, I don't think it's unreasonable, given that there is support for the 1250 number, to make that change. And I do agree with Jim that we don't, although it has been a long time that we've been working on this, I'm not sure that it's going to be any more right if we make the change to 1250. But I don't think it's unreasonable to do that, so I am going to support this.
Any other comments or questions? Are you ready to vote on Mike's amendment?
Could you restate the amendment?
It is to change the threshold in the road preservation law from 1,000 truck trips to 1,250 truck trips.
And to schedule a new public hearing.
Yes, and to schedule a new public hearing. And welcome, Martha. I'm glad you're back, just in time to vote. All right, all in favor of Mike's amendment, raise your hands, please. Opposed, the same? I get 5, 4, 9 opposed. I don't count very well, but it's certainly clear that it failed. Did you count them?
5 ayes, 10 noes.
5 ayes, 10 noes.
Yeah.
There were 10 noes.
5 ayes, 10 noes.
5. Thank you, Kathy. So now we're back on the original road preservation resolution 140. Frank.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. I'd like to ask a question perhaps of the committee, certainly maybe of Joe. When we ran into a snag at the Board of Health a number of years ago with regard to the sanitary code, it's a situation I described to Joe. The then existing code required that a homeowner, in order to comply with building a new septic system, had to purchase the adjoining lot at a considerable expense. And this happened in more than one instance. We delayed implementing the sanitary code until we came up with a method to establish a waiver process. And John Anderson was then the associated with environmental health. And the process worked then. It's still in existence now, and it works very well. So I would like to ask, I was reading the revised proposal here, and I don't see anything in there regarding a waiver process. Is there a provision for a waiver process in the event that what we heard from Gene McFeeters in particular, but is there a process that we can invoke here so that there could be a waiver process? And if not, why not? I don't know, is Joe the right person to address that, or Jonathan?
There's not a waiver process.
Well, there's not a waiver process per se, but one would wonder, I mean, in fact, if you are doing a project and it's not going to affect it's not going to damage the road, then you shouldn't have to pay a bond or anything. As opposed to a waiver what I was talking about before, because, I mean, what would you get a waiver for? The laws by project. So I was thinking that rather than have any kind of waiver, it would make sense for those, like, businesses that would be continuously using a road, like a sand and gravel supply place, that we can make a predetermination on the road, not on the applicant or the project, but with respect to a road. And that would, in a way, be similar to a waiver. It may be, it's never going to waive everything completely, but it would might be able to say, well, this road could handle more than 1,000 or something like that. So I don't know about, I would use the word waiver, but I think there could be predeterminations which could result in, could achieve the same result.
Dewey, may I ask a follow-up?
Yes.
John, we've heard from a couple of people tonight already asking that this will be under review during a year, you know, assuming it passes. Is this the kind of thing that you'd give a look to over the next year or 6 months to develop that kind of an insert, that anything taking place on that road, the way you just described it, that this law could be amended?
Yes, certainly. My hope is that the law wouldn't have to be amended because we still have to develop the process for determining who would need a bond, what the bond would be, how we determine the damages for the road. So my feeling and hope is that it could be incorporated into that and we wouldn't have to change the law. But the law could change if circumstances warrant that.
Okay, but you're prepared to proceed with something like that?
Right, and that's what we have the RFP out for, that I hope would be part of our process.
Okay, thank you.
Carol?
Yeah, I just want to share with people in answer to some of the questions.
first that I'll remind people that we spent a lot of time looking at whether there were other procedures we should be using as a basis here rather than overall truck trips that would have taken into account distinctions between different kinds of trucks based on easels, equivalent single axle loads, and decided that on that and times of year, roads at this time of year with the road, the weather the way that it is, are much more vulnerable than at dry times of year or frozen times of year. And there was a lot of discussion about that. And it relates because we heard industry and engineering representatives and in concert with all sort of decided to go for this simpler procedure up front with a more intensive engineering procedure once we determined we need to talk to people. I will point out that the revisions that are in your packet came as a result of the industry representatives sitting at the table with us as a committee and literally proposing revisions that we accepted as a committee. It has to do with the wording, clarifying on page 3 at the top there, the damaged county highway as a result of this activity on a county highway. So that there were some certain clarifying provisions they wanted put in, and the other one that's in there on page 4, Frank, is that the date that this will take effect will not be immediately. And again, this was working with the people who came to talk to us, that it will instead take place not till January 1st, so that there is time to do some of this additional work. And then I will also just share with you some of what we talked about the competition issue and it was a long discussion. It was maybe an hour and a half. But one of the things that we talked about was that of the different industry representatives who were there, and there were institutional representatives, and the thoughts there were that the institutional projects are so large that we could double or triple the number we're talking about, and they would still have to come and talk to us, and that in terms of the competition, that there were already people at the table with us who sat on one side or the other and had advantages or disadvantages already based on their location. One on a highway, one not on the highway, and they were already having to deal with some of those just vagaries of their business decisions as to where to locate, the additional cost of fuel and driver time to go to more remote locations that were on a highway versus those that were closer to where some of the big projects are, but are on roads that and on properties where your property taxes may be different. And then those who are out of the county most certainly have higher costs due to labor and fuel, which immediately has already introduced a bias, if you will, and I think a good one, towards our local industry. So those are just some of the things I'll throw out. There's a lot other conversation, but in answer to your questions.
Kathy, did you have your hand up?
Thank you.
Yes, I do.
Please.
Thank you. At the last meeting, we talked about this draft law, and if we put it on the table, the changes that would be made at committee, if they weren't substantive, it could be brought back without having to go through a public hearing. Some of the changes have been discussed in general. I could only find 3 of them, but I just wanted to ask the county attorney and give him a chance to clarify, since we've heard about all the collaboration that went on, that the changes that have been specified in this new revised draft version don't rise to the extent of substantive changes, so that if we should decide to go forward and vote on this tonight, it would be legal. We wouldn't need to have another public hearing.
Sure. Actually, the law is that you don't need to have another public hearing unless the changes are substantial.
substantial. I did that last time.
Right.
I don't know the difference, but to me, the changes that were made don't look very substantial.
Well, I agree that I do not believe these are substantial. It's very difficult to say exactly what is substantial. There are not many cases. The few cases there are actually usually in the zoning thing. Like if you, the couple I can give you that I know of is, for example, if you change like from a residential to a commercial, that's substantial. But if you just change the footage which you need to build, that's not substantial. But there's nothing quite like this. But this seems to me very much not substantial.
Can I just add a follow-up? It seems to me that the essence of this is specifying county roads. As far as I can tell, it says, upon determination by the county highway manager that a temporary project may, and it used to say generate high impact, and now it says may damage a county highway as a result of high impact, high frequency traffic on the county highway. So it's very clearly specifying that this traffic, that this legislation just applies to traffic on county highways. Anything else in there that I can't read besides the change of the date?
Well, the only other, there is that change that you point out. It makes clear that we're just talking about on county highway. It also says that he, that in the event he determines that he, that there, it would not damage a county road, he doesn't have to post the road. Before, it was not discretionary. But in my mind, that's not really a significant change, because if he was of the mind that it wasn't going to damage the county road, he would then not have required a bond and not have changed the route, so all that would really be different is paperwork. So it makes it more discretionary, but if he was going, if he was, you know, if he did not believe it would damage the county road anyway, as a practical matter, it would make no difference.
That helps, thanks. Jim.
I would like to call the question.
Is that a second, Brian? All right, we don't discuss that. All in favor of calling the question, raise your hand, please.
Aye.
I get 12. Opposed? 3. The question has been called. We're voting on Resolution 140 that was lifted from the table quite a while ago that adopts the road preservation law with the changes that you have heard described in some detail tonight, none of which are considered to be substantial. All in favor of adopting Resolution 140, raise your hand, please.
Aye.
That appears to be unanimous. Thank you all. Martha came back just in time to handle the capital program review part of the agenda, but Carol hasn't finished F&I.
You are right. Oh, no.
Did you have a report? You have one more resolution.
I do have a report, yes. Most of what we did you have now heard or passed as part of the consent agenda or this. I will just report on one other development. We heard a report and accepted findings of our staff that they have found a way to stay in budget on the Ellis Hollow Road shoulder coloring portion of the project. They took our decision to not go over budget back and looked carefully about at whether there were other ways they could achieve the coloring that was part of the original project, and found a way. It's not last quite as long as what we did, as what we had in the original project. And they came to us and they said, we can just do this as part of the project, but we think we should come and ask your permission. And we gave it in committee, and then we then had further discussion at committee that while we could do that in committee, we thought it was important to bring it to all of you, at least for information or action. I don't know. We don't feel there's any other further action needed, but if anybody else here did, we thought that people should know about it. It was we're pleased that they found a way to do this at a lower cost, and we urge them to go ahead. Any questions on that?
Yeah.
So
what's the process?
The process was that it is part, they were able to do it as part of the budget that we approved.
I understand that, but what...
Oh, what is the process?
What will they be doing? Will they just be putting a coat of paint on the shoulder?
Joe, do you...
Would John Levin like to explain it?
May I offer a couple of comments while John's coming up to the microphone and talk about the specific treatment? This is something that can stay within the capital budget, so it doesn't need to exceed the budget. We can pay for it with existing funds. I think the important, another important fact here, too, is there are other roads in the queue that may want to look at this kind of shoulder coloring treatment as a way to calm traffic. Hanshaw's coming up. There will be others that want to talk about doing colored shoulders as a way to do traffic calming. I think what we've learned in this process is, although there are some studies that provide some information on whether this works or not, they're pretty spare. So this is an opportunity within the budget of the Ellis Hollow project to do a treatment and then to do some science, to take a look at speeds that are currently occurring along that road, and we're taking speed counts right now, to be able to evaluate what those speeds are now, and then after this less expensive treatment occurs, how has that affected speeds along Ellis Hollow? So that it really informs our decisions and the community's decisions and other communities' decisions about whether this shoulder coloring treatment does in fact work to slow down, to calm traffic. So that's another important element of what we would propose to do here. The specifics of what that fluid is that will go on top of the shoulders, I'll let John speak to that.
Please. Microphone. Well, we asked you to speak. I have something to say, and Peter, I'll call in, but go ahead, John.
Okay. I don't know if you remember the treatment that was done on portions of Ellis Hollow Road and on Warren Road in the past. This is something that is a little more scientifically researched, developed, but it is basically a tinting, painting process, yes.
The lifespan?
Lifespan, the vendor that we've been dealing with on this says that he would expect 3 to 4 years.
Peter, you wish to say something?
Yes, I do. I'm quite thrilled by this. And it's going to be hard for me to keep it out of my voice and remain dispassionate. But after the last discussion, I'm against this, the green shoulders. It's my gut feeling that it doesn't work. But like anything else, I'm open-minded to evidence. And at the last meeting, when we were discussing this in the first place, there were some studies that were cited to show that in fact it does affect traffic calming. I read them carefully. I was unconvinced. I called up the author of one of these articles that published it 12 years ago and had a very long, interesting conversation. This was about the tennis court painting in Central Florida. And after that, I was not convinced that, in fact, it did show that traffic was calm. But one thing I was convinced of is that nobody knows. I asked him, well, what other data is there? He said, I don't know of any other data. He said, do you read German? I said, no. He said, well, I think there may be something in some European books. I said, you mean after all of this discussion that's gone on in Tompkins County that in the United States there's nothing published on whether coloring shoulders? He says, no. He says, some people think it does, some people think it didn't. And I think we have an opportunity that we can't let pass to make a real substantial contribution not only to our future roads, but to roads all over the country. So I'm really thrilled at this opportunity and think we should not pass it up.
I saw Martha's hand.
Cleveland, and there was some...
I just want to finish my report, and I have one more resolution.
No, stay on this one, Carol.
Aside from the fact that we've confounded the results by talking about it so much, I think, Peter, there might be a publishable article in this for you. So.
Leslie?
Thank you. Well, I'm not as thrilled as Peter is. I'm glad he is. At committee, I did not support this because I thought that we had a lot of discussion at our previous legislature meeting, and it occurred to me that at that meeting we were talking about needing to appropriate additional fund balance money to make this happen, but now I'm hearing that there's enough money in the project to make it happen, so I'm not sure where how we came about this money that's still in the project. So I just could not wrap myself around it. And what I said in committee and what it felt like to me, and I'll, you know, be very frank about it, is that it felt like it was just another way around trying to make this happen. Although I heard about the research, and certainly not accusing anybody of anything, but that's how it came across to me. Because first there was no money, we needed this, now we found money, and I'm not sure how all of this happens.
Before I call on another legislator, John Lampman, could you say where the money came from that can be used in this cheaper way?
There is money that still remains within the capital budget. And before, when we were asking for an increase, that was to do a process that had a longer lifespan and cost quite a bit more, about five times as much as what we're talking about now. And so we needed that money to do that longer lifespan process. But we can do this process with the money that is still remaining within the capital budget.
Thank you.
Will?
Thank you, Dylan. John, don't go too far away. You said that this current process will have a 3 lifespan, and presumably by that time we'll have some indication whether it actually has the desired effect. Is it renewable? Can it be retreatable, or is it just to disappear? And is there ever the potential, if we determine that these are actually effective, of going to that more expensive process at a later date?
This process would be renewable, and yes, if we choose to go to a different process, say the one that we had talked about the last legislature, we would be able to do that also.
Thank you.
Dave?
The question I had has already been asked and answered. Thank you.
Okay. Carol, you had your hand up.
I have one more resolution if we're done on that one.
Oh, we're not done on this one. Kathy has something on this one.
While I'm thrilled at the resourcefulness of the planning department, as I mentioned at the previous meeting, I do think that utilizing a process like this is one that's going to be attractive to everyone in the county that has roads, whether they're a vocal group or not, and that this is something that we should consider in our policy. So I appreciate that the committee thought enough to bring it to the legislature, since it can have implications for our next road and our next road and our next road, particularly where they're high use or high impact uses involved. So I do think that an experiment of this nature is both interesting and relevant for the whole legislature to discuss. And I think it's great that you figured out a way to keep it included, even though it's clearly not as long-lasting as the process you were thinking of, but also it's not as expensive, so you can get it in there. But the implications of it, for me, are troubling. I know that it's a compromise solution, but again, as a legislator, I think that before we go down this path, we should think about the precedents that we're setting in terms of every road in the county that we work on, and every road that has pedestrian traffic, and every road that has bicycle traffic and child traffic, and how do we say which ones get it and which ones don't? Is it by whether we're threatened with a lawsuit, whether the community comes out in force, whether the I'm just asking whether the highway manager decides that it's so. These are things that we need to consider, because once we pretty much set it up that we've got an experiment in place and it is or it isn't or it might be effective in the short run, the long run, or possibly not, we got to go forward with it. So for those reasons, I'm going to vote no on this. I don't get to vote on it. Well, that's regrettable. And I'd like to suggest that in the future, these should be brought to the legislature, and I'd like to put my stamp on this to say that if the planning department and the highway department are as resourceful as they are, it's a great thing, but really something like this has far-reaching implications, and I think it should be brought to the entire legislature for discussion and results, particularly considering the vote of the last meeting.
I'm going to insert myself in here, and I know it's time for us to take a break, but it'd be really good to finish with F and I before we take that break. I was careful to drive on Ellis Hollow when I left town to go to Saratoga, and I came back driving on Ellis Hollow Road. I saw no equipment out there to record if I were speeding. There was nothing. So I felt free to speed or not. But as Martha said, our discussing this can confound the results of the experiment. I am sorry that Peter's gut tells him it is not effective. Peter lived in town when we had our experiment on Ellis Hollow and on Warren Roads, just painting the shoulders to see what happened. It did not last long. But I actually drove Warren Road a lot then and experienced firsthand what colored shoulders do. If you see a black driving lane and something green on the side, your head tells you the driving lane is where the black pavement is. And it does keep you from wanting to speed as much. In federal grants for highway projects now, they require one to look at all modes of transit using the roads. It means pedestrians, bikes, buses, as well as cars and trucks. New York State has just become part of the movement. It has a complete streets law now in place, which means for state money, we also have to look at how to calm traffic and make roads usable by pedestrians and bikes as well as motor vehicles. So it's not going to go away, and I'm happy that our staff has found this alternative to try here. I'm not at all sure that it will be as good as their original plan, so I'm not sure it will necessarily guide the decision for Hanshaw Road or other projects, but we can't get away from traffic calming, and I'm glad we can't. So you want to finish your one other motion? Resolution, Carol?
Yeah, thank you. Resolution F, page 9 in your packets, appropriation from solid waste capital reserve. And I so move.
Is that a second, Mike? Thank you. Is there anything more you want to say, Carol?
Well, there's an explanation on the bottom of the page there. This is for site drainage repair, pavement upgrade, modification and expansion of the education room, replacement of large overhead doors and outdoor lighting that was not in the scope of the original re-community agreement.
This requires a short roll call. Are you ready to vote? Yes, would you call?
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Robison?
Yes.
Does anyone wish to be recorded? No. I see none, so that's unanimous. Thank you all. We will take our 5 or 8 minute break. Please be back here.
At
14 of.